Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Veneria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
It's Friday, the Friday after the election, and there's still a lot of meltdowns that are happening everywhere in the media over Trump's election. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. I appreciate you being here today. Don't forget, get your tickets for Wednesday night. Me and Jimmy Failla together, Politics and Pints. It's going to be a great night. 1210WPHG.com is where you go. And tomorrow night, I'll be on his show on Fox News. So tune into that at 10 p.m. Dr. Wilfred Riley, my guest, he joins us every week here on Talk Radio 1210WPHG, most weeks anyway. He's a busy, busy guy. He's author, of course, of the wonderful book, Must Read Book, and now it's going to be more relevant than ever as we try to right the ship of our curriculum, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. What about you?
I'd love to see you as Secretary of Education. Although I want to abolish the department, so I don't know how long your job would last. It's the only downside.
Yeah, I'm actually profoundly unqualified, because the thing is, the Secretary of Education doesn't teach and doesn't do research.
Right.
So if you ever look into the Department of Education, it's a bit up in the air what they do. I mean, they basically manage the racial brainwashing in the schools, and they run the standardized test schedule. But the Department of Education doesn't run any schools. They don't do anything I know how to do.
Well, you could stop them from doing the indoctrination on our kids.
Yeah, I could do the Millie routine. I could just sit in an office and say, afuera, which means out of here, every time anyone brings in a program. Like, we need another standardized test. No, we don't. We need education about gay black women. No, we don't. You know, I'd actually probably be useful just in that role. Like, the headhunter that Elon hired, who cut 80% of Twitter staff, he didn't do anything except get out of here. Yeah. So when you're in some situations, that may be needed.
How does it feel to know that you're a racist and a misogynist?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, but almost everyone is, right? I mean, like, you're looking at the vote against Kamala Harris, and it was really sort of a rainbow coalition. I mean, you had 54% of Hispanic men. You had 65% of natives, including 70% of native women. You had a little under 30% of black men. You had 59% of white men, 53% of white women for all the beat up they take. There was really no one except for black women and Jewish Americans and I don't mean to stereotype either of those groups, so those are two outliers, but there was really no one that liked Kamala Harris. So that's a lot of racism out there, just mysteriously among like black guys and Dominicans. You never would have expected it.
I have to play some of this reaction for you and get your opinion on this. So first of all, I want to start with this. I've been waiting for you all week on this. Here's crazy okay. Lawrence O'Donnell. Not enough Americans believe in the full equality of women. Cut 19.
Frederick Douglass would be so proud and admiring of Kamala Harris. He did not just fight for the right to vote for black men when only white men could vote. He also fought for the right to vote for all women. When he was editor of the newspaper, The North Star, Frederick Douglass wrote, "We hold woman to be justly entitled to all we claim for man." That was a very unpopular opinion among white men in this country at that time, and it remains.
Well, anyway, you get the point.
Opinion.
I can't listen. I can't. There's not much I can take from him, but you get the point. We don't believe in the full equality of women.
Well, I think this really gets into how deeply a certain worldview has seeped into most people's brains on the left, because there are only a few paradigms in society that shape everything that people see. I have friends that are devout, quote-unquote, trad cats, mostly people of Hispanic and Italian, Eastern European descent, and they will see things through this lens of sin, religion, virtue, what works have I done today. I'm not the most religious guy, but I don't really see anything wrong with that. But you now see that, quote-unquote, wokeness has done pretty much the same thing, where everything is seen, a date night with your wife, who you hire at the office, everything is seen through this dynamic of power relations and sort of race, sex. So when a black candidate runs against a white candidate, the assumption these people make is that racism is going to play a key role in the race. And if you see results that don't logically seem to indicate that, I mean, again, 54% of Hispanic men voted for the white candidate, then what they do is switch to the next power vector, right? So like, well, Hispanics may not be sexist against whites or racist against whites or blacks, but man, are they sexist. And I think this is really tiresome. If I had to give an opinion on it, I don't think there's any evidence that black men are any more sexist than anybody else or anything like that. What actually drove people to vote for Trump was his economic policy positions. Like, if you look at what people said when they came out of the voting booth across racial lines, they said they oppose inflation. They're disgusted by what happened to women, actually, after the war in Afghanistan, which we basically lost. You know, they're tired of what's going on in the schools, all this trans stuff. Like, they gave very specific reasons. Illegal immigration was probably the biggest reason given other than inflation. So, like, if something that I noticed as a consultant and then I started seeing people saying in right-wing media, there are eight counties on the Texas-Mexico border, Maverick County, so on. They're big. They're semi-urban, half white, half Mexican. Every one of those counties went for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So all those ranchers riding around with guns on their back, 60% Hispanic, they all voted Republican. So I think the obvious, and that's because there have been people coming through their fields for 3 years with backpacks on their backs saying it's looking for work. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious what happened, but there's an attempt now to spin it into this usual race, gender, class, orientation paradigm.
You even had Cenk Yeager of the Young Turks say it had nothing to do with race or sex. It's that the Democrat Party is the party of elites. It's what Bernie Sanders came out and said. He said, when the Democrat Party abandoned working class people, it's no surprise that working class people abandoned the Democrat Party. David Axelrod came out the other day or yesterday or so, and he basically echoed what James Carville has said in the past about the Democrat Party. The problem is that they're becoming a smarty pants, suburban, college educated party. And Carville had once said, and he said this a while ago, though, he said that they are the party of the faculty lounge and the coastal elites. And he specifically brought up in that interview with Maureen Dowd the preachy white liberal women who tell us how to eat our peas and how that turns off black men, for example, and people are tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, a comment I just heard from a guy I won't name at a dinner the other day was that if he had to think of an archetypal description of a lot of people who seem to be speaking for the left, like Joy Reid, Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris, it would be my first wife, like a certain angry, very female-led approach to a whole bunch of issues. Yeah, I think that's correct. That irritates most people, and by no means just entirely men, if you ask business women who they'd rather work under at some time. But I think that the point that Bernie made is actually a little deeper than that. So, like, there's some race stuff, some gender stuff, so on, that goes into all this. But the actual point, the thing in our politics that might be one of my next books that I don't really think anyone's commented on at length is the transition in terms of who has money. So Republicans used to be the party of people that had money, like the country club party. And that's because the industries that traditionally have produced real wealth, whether you're talking about stock markets, whether you're talking oil rigs, you're talking about the production of iron and steel, forestry, those are GOP-controlled industries. Now things have changed. So, like, the biggest producer of money in the country is tech. You know, all this DEI crap is about 10% of business. So you have a situation where a lot of the groups that make up the Democratic Party, like liberal women, urbanites, people with what we would have traditionally thought of as useless college degrees, are getting pretty rich. So the party's agenda, like the issues they're debating, abortion and this kind of thing, don't really appeal to working class people in ethnic white neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, trailer parks, so on down the line. In fact, many of these arguments seem absolutely crazy. You know, something that I saw in Republican ads that went out in neighborhoods of ranch houses in Louisville and Frankfort was this picture of what's it, Admiral Levine, the overweight transgender, you know, health and human services lead, and that other dude, Sam Brinton.
And he's in a dress. The luggage
Luggage thief. But no, like, I'm sure you've seen this picture before, but it's like the two of them, arms around each other's waist. They're both wearing, like, nice party dresses, which your wife would wear on a hot date. His is, like, blue, and it comes down just below, let's say, his rear. He's got heels on. And, I mean, I think if you're looking at that and you're, like, a white trucker living next door to your black buddy, that's not going to motivate you to vote for the Dems. So anyway, as wealth has increased in the Democratic Party, issues have changed.
Now, I'm not going to play this clip. I'm just going to read this and then we'll move on. But Sonny Hostin from The View said the following, quote, "What is wrong with this country that they would choose a message of divisiveness, of xenophobia, of racism, of misogyny?" So to your point, Dr. Wilfred Riley, how much money do you think Sonny Hostin on The View makes a year? You think she's making, what, 15, 18 bucks an hour probably, or maybe a little bit more?
Maybe like 20. No, I mean, actually, the answer is that everyone on The View has, I think it's a $2.7 million contract. They just renegotiated. Goldberg leads the panel with $5 million. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, that's another industry, right, in the podcast era, the cable news era, that's really expanded, media. And media leans 90% to the left. Academia, I mean, we have the same number of professors we did in 1964, but we've expanded administrative staff who usually get paid six figures by 800%, something like that. So you have these new fields that are very highly paid that are kind of the new upper middle class and that are all on the left. And the Democratic Party's agenda is being I hadn't even really thought about this before the past couple of weeks, but is being largely shaped by these people. So when you look at what the Democrats have traditionally backed, it's like the few things I agree with the left on, like, you know, healthcare, Frenchmen can do it, why can't we? You know, we need to build some better roads. Wouldn't it be nice to have some trains that run on time? You know, unfortunate reference there, but you know what I mean. That's generally what they've advocated for, and the abortion and all the other stuff that nobody likes, that's just been in the background. Like, hey, don't read our policy platform too closely. Now that's leading. Like, the stuff about toxic masculinity, the stuff about shout your abortion, the stuff about, like, extreme female sexuality, the ethical slut book's been given out at Democratic events. And I think most people just look at that and they say, I don't want any part of that. I don't think that's healthy for my daughter. That's not what I'm into. That's extremely bizarre.
I agree. And we talked about this. I mean, I said the sleeper issue. I didn't just say it, but a lot of people did. The sleeper issue in this election was going to be the transgender athlete issue. And I think a lot of the surge of white college educated women that came out, and you said Trump got 53% of that vote of white women. A lot of that was probably driven by the fact that their little girl might have to share a locker room with a dude with a schlong. I don't think we can discount that, because I've heard that from a lot of my friends who are moms. You know, it's a big worry for them. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Riley, is now that Trump won and he's going to be president again, Mayor Eric Adams came out and said something very amazing regarding New York City and illegal immigrants. I want you to take a listen to this new policy change by the mayor a day after he spoke to the president-elect. And get your thoughts on this. Cut number two.
The city will no longer issue vouchers to migrants to pay for food, ending a controversial program that had repeatedly come under attack by conservatives and others.
This pilot program in New York City, drenched in both humanity and controversy, distributed debit cards to migrant families staying in city-funded hotels and allowing them to buy their own food. What is news reporter Josh Einiger following the breaking news for us? Josh?
Well, Bill, it's a program that, as you say, generated plenty of controversy, but now its absence may raise even more questions. The so-called Immediate Response Cards pilot program was designed to help feed migrant families who'd found themselves in New York with no way to afford food. The one-year contract provided what the city described as culturally relevant food to 2,600 migrant families, allowing them to basically buy what they wanted. A family of four with two kids under five got about $350 per week to cover food in a program the city said would actually save taxpayers millions a year. It also reduced food waste. You may remember the food the city had been providing in migrant shelters was seen as not culturally sensitive to the needs of some migrant groups, and it ended up just going to waste.
So lots to unpack in that clip, Dr. Riley, no doubt about it. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Eric Adams is in kind of a tough position. I mean, he himself is a former cop. He's popular with street cops, black and white. I mean, he understands that a lot of this stuff that his city's been doing is complete nonsense. And he's tried to redirect New York as much as possible. I mean, he's a Democrat. I don't love him. But he's tried to, as much as possible, just do sane things. Like, he killed about two-thirds of the rats in New York. He did that whole rat thing where he was joking about rats on Twitter. He got New Yorkers as a Chicagoan. I'm impressed. He got them to start using trash cans. He bought trash bins for the first time in New York, brought them to the verge of civilization. But when it came to some of this stuff like the migrant thing, I mean, he was giving debit cards to migrants. New York was housing migrants, quote unquote, in upscale hotels. And this is extremely annoying. Like, I travel as a consultant. Like, if you're going to the Four Seasons or the Sherry Netherland or something, I mean, you and the client are paying $600 a night. It's kind of weird to see people walking into the room next to you with, like, plastic bags full of all their stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like one of the few things I'm kind of classist about. Like, hey, buddy, what are you doing here? So, I mean, he is now, I think that's going to end. You know, the whole thing with Eric Adams, frankly, I've heard this behind the scenes from a couple people. I wouldn't be surprised if you had. There is a worry about, are you going to be punished by the sitting president, if that's Joe Biden or Kamala Harris? I mean, we just saw some really dubious ethics charges filed against Eric Adams.
Yeah.
Where the claim was that over 4 years, he'd gotten $100,000 in comp tickets and this kind of thing, and that's across his entire, like, inner circle of people. I don't think there's a politician in the country you couldn't say that about. Like, he got bumped up to first class.
Right.
And that's what a lot of these political charges are, right? I mean, Chris Rock once famously described the charges against Clinton as crap I didn't even know was crimes. You know, you gave a former lover a job. I mean, that's right. What most of it is when they're out to get you. That's what the charges against Adams were. He knew that. With Trump in office, I think he'll work perfectly well with the new top man. I think he's probably a little relieved.
I agree. And I think because Trump even said, he said, you know, when he got indicted, he said, I said, they're going to indict this guy for speaking out, because he came out and said, if you're sending us 10,000 illegal immigrants a day, you're going to destroy New York City. You're going to destroy New York City. And it is, the old saying is, you know, if the government wants to get you, the government's going to get you. So, you know, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. It's like, all right, well, now we'll go get him. I mean, and it sends a message to other people to not get out of line with this stuff and keep your mouth shut. Now that Trump's going to get in there and probably go a long way to just drop the charges against Eric Adams altogether and just say this is nonsense. You know, we're turning the page on this. So I guess the other question I want to ask you about dropping charges is, what about Hunter Biden? Where does he stand in all this? Speaking of cocaine and hookers, not that we brought it up, but I'm always just thinking about them.
Yeah.
So speaking of cocaine and hookers, where does Hunter go from here?
If I were Trump, I'd pardon Hunter. I mean, so there's been a whole cycle of this bet. Like, we got into some 1970s getting Nixon, all the president's men kind of stuff recently, where Trump was hit with just completely BS charges. I mean, like the 34 felony counts, quote unquote, that's a single misdemeanor count for paying off a mistress. And I think that they missed the statute of limitations by 3 days on that or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just complete nonsense. What, by the way, technically speaking, the way they got 34 charges was that every single check that Trump wrote, as I understand, was a charge, and then every single notification of that in the QuickBooks, because he didn't think it was illegal and kept fair records, or the Excel, that was a charge. So if Trump wrote 17 $1,000 checks or something like that, or he probably did money transfers, no one would write 17 checks. But like every time that happened, that was a charge. The entire claim was that Trump had an NDO, non-disclosure pact, with Stormy Daniels, and he agreed to give her a sum like $30,000 so that she would shut her mouth, not normally what she's known for, and not comment during this busy election. And I'm like, as a business guy, I don't even think that's illegal. But, you know, technically he did it in a state where you're not supposed to do it, so you can charge him. But they took the one state MD and they made that 34 federal felonies. That's kind of the point I'm getting to. And then in response, you saw the GOP. I mean, I think there's some organization here respond. They were going after Joe Biden. They got at least Hunter. They got Biden business partners. I would pardon Hunter Biden. I mean, I think that this entire era of mutually assured destruction, like, now we're going to charge you with a BS made up crime, Mayor Adams. I don't think that's a good thing. I mean, going back through history, I suspect this is more common than we think. Like, what Nixon was accused of was pretty common during his time.
Sure.
I think the Democrats are actually a bit more ruthless with this sort of stuff. They control more of the upper internal bureaucracy, and so that's why GOP administrations are seen as more corrupt. But to the extent you can be magnanimous and let somebody go, I probably would once. If I get impeached again, it's on. Like, we're throwing governors in jail.
Yeah, the exception I would make are the bureaucrats who purposely break the law and target people using their powers to do so within government, you know, the FBI or the whatever other three or four letter agency. Like, I want those people to be held accountable because I want to send a message to the bureaucracy. Like, it's not OK to destroy people's constitutional rights. That's not why you're there. And if you do it, we are going to hold you accountable. That's the exception I would make. I know it's different from what we're talking about here, but just in terms of quote unquote lawfare, you know, that to me is much more about accountability than lawfare. And I'm hopeful we'll see some of that.
Yeah, by the way, I think Trump gave one of the best public policy statements I've ever seen today. This was shared online by the Twitter account Artemis Consort, who is a young consultant type who saw this probably almost as soon as it happened and clipped a video, put it up there. But Trump gave a speech where he said, we need to root out sort of the censorship industrial complex in these bureaucracies, like this group of federal agents that will come forward and tell Twitter or Facebook to take down something about vaccine safety, or that will the people that were responsible for the Hunter Biden laptop lie all still work in the government. They all have security clearances. And Trump's comment was, I'd like to get together with Elon or Mark Zuckerberg and look through kind of the Twitter files and the Facebook files. And obviously, you know what that is, and see who the bureaucrats were that were contacting the government, contacting these people from my administration, from Biden's administration, Obama's administration, and just fire them all. You shouldn't be telling Reddit what their policy should be on public health stories. And I agree with that. I thought it was one of the better short speeches he's given.
Excellent. Well, I have to end it there because I have a short show today, but I always appreciate it, my friend. Lies my liberal teacher told me. Dr. Wilfred Riley, we will talk again next week, I'm sure, for a longer conversation, but I appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
You too. Have a good one.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show, brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, a premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Yes, the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May. I actually have some friends there this weekend who are staying there because the kids are out of school for the NJEA convention, so they took their kids there. My buddy sent me a note. He said, this is a beautiful place. I see now why it's your happy place. It really is. New Jersey's full-service resort, conference center, and top beach destination wedding venue. Visit GrandHotelCapeMay.com for more information. Sean is doing a great job today with the video. Bravo, Sean. Well done. I appreciate it very much. And so since you're there, I want to just play this clip because it's visual. It's Anthony Scar. It's I'm sorry, Michael the Rat Cohen getting destroyed on his own chat, where people are putting like a turkey around his head and other things. And since the YouTube community is here streaming, and we want to give you special little nuggets, and this really is more visual than audio, but it's so worth it. It's my favorite thing I've watched all day today. And this is the Big Serve of the Hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Tomorrow is his Veterans Breakfast and free community shredding event from 9 to noon at his office in Cinnaminson, New Jersey. Stop by, say hello to our veterans, and get some free breakfast and bring your documents you need shredded. Cut number 5.
No problem. Wow. Genius you are. Can we stop with that? I appreciate it. I don't like the stupid turkeys. All right.
You're putting it around his head.
I did. I said I was leaving. And then the following day, get that through your dumb heads. The following day, I turned around and I said that there's no chance in the world that I'm leaving my country. Thank you very much. All right? I'm not leaving anyway. You leave. This is my country. And I have every right, every single right within which to turn around, would we stop so we can... All right, 2 seconds, I'm going to end up blocking this idiot.
The cowboy hat.
They're putting all this stuff on Cohen's face as he's talking. A giant turkey, a cowboy hat, laser shooting out of his eyes. And he keeps moving the stuff off his screen. Look at that Elvis hair. The Elvis hair, the glasses.
The anger he gets, the worse they make.
It's the greatest thing. So great. Oh, my God. Oh, that was fantastic. That was the best thing to watch. That was the best visual clip all week, don't you think? Wow. I'm actually crying right now. The Elvis hair and the turkey around him. Oh, man. That's great. All right. Great job, guys. Great job, Justin, all week producing. And DeSantis, it was great to have you physically here as well. We did a hell of a job covering the election this week. And the highlight was we got a phone call from, his name escapes me right now.
Chris Forsyth.
Chris Forsyth, thank you.
Jimmy Justin. Matthews, is that who you're thinking of?
Jimmy Matthews, yes. Got a big phone call from Jimmy Matthews this week, and Chris Forsyth dropping an F-bomb. That was big. What else? Trying to think some other highlights of the week.
Somebody called in on election night, but I can't remember who it was.
Election night. Well, I know John from Burlington called in to talk about the lines of the polls.
Oh, yeah.
There was that. So... it'll come to me. I don't know. But it'll be, it's like the tip of my tongue. The name is right there. It's at the tip of my tongue. But all right, listen, have a great weekend. I got to run, but get your tickets now for our 1210 WPHT Politics and Pints, okay, with Jimmy Failla. Just go to 1210WPHT.com. Tickets are selling. I'm looking at the seating chart, and a lot of the primo ones are gone. I think there's two VIP tickets left. So do it right now, 1210WPHT. It's November 13th at the Media Theater for the Performing Arts on State Street, East State Street, in Media, PA. It's just me and Fela hanging out, having a blast, having a great time, laughing it up, and joking about all the craziness of the world. Think about how much fun we can have making fun of people like that liberal professor and Michael Cohen and other people like that. Also, too, tomorrow night I'm going to be on his show on Fox News Saturday night with Jimmy Fela, so check it out and tune in at 10 p.m. But really, get the tickets, because, you know, we haven't done a live event like this in a while. I want to make sure it's a big success. So I want the Zioli Army to turn out for it. I promise you'll get your money's worth from the entertainment factor of this. He's working on his new comedy show, comedy special. So he's going to be trying out a lot of new jokes for us that you have not heard before. And we'll be in rare form, no doubt about it. And we've earned it. We've earned it. We've earned a celebration. We've earned a party. We've earned a great night to be together. So let's do it on November 13th at the Media Theater in Media, PA. My congratulations to Dave McCormick. You're going to be a great senator, my friend. I'm very proud of you. It's been an honor to get to know you and Dina over the last couple of years. And it's a shame that the lesser Casey has yet to concede. He's an election denier, and there's no other way to put it than he is an election denier. Have a great rest of your week. Thanks for everything you did to save our country. God bless you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike Fenaria Jr. with Allsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Fenaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC, advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hi, I'm Mike Fenaria Jr. with Allsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Fenaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC, advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.